Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we're going to be covering Game of Thrones Season 2, Episode 3, What is Dead May Never Die, and Season 2, Episode 4, Garden of Bones.
Yay.
Yes.
Yay.
Yay.
And there's going to be, there will be spoilers, possibly, and there are definitely
there will be spoilers, Bob. I will guarantee I do have spoilers for this one because I have a lot to say.
You can't help yourself, can you?
I can't, and no one freaking cares, so...
Well, that's true.
Raise really your hand people. If you care.
Look, I would tell you that we're the only people listening to this, but we had a listen in Wyoming, so I don't really know.
Oh, welcome, Wyoming. We hope
welcome,
you're
enjoying. Wyoming.
Hope you haven't... I hope you have seen the show, so I'm not ruining things for you. I hope you don't mind that I spoil something later on. Yeah. I want to talk about a character that comes up.
Okay. All right.
And not the character you're thinking.
Okay. We will discuss whatever we're going to discuss, and there will be spoilers, but we're also having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
Dr. Pepper. Oddly enough, it kind of works because there's a nurse that shows up.
Why does this sound like playing doctor on Star Trek kind of thing? You know,
it's like... Damn it, Jim! I almost said I'm not a doctor.
Damn it. I'm a doctor.
Imagine if he said that. Damn it, Jim! I'm not a doctor.
Fucking classic.
Why are you here?
Yes. Why are you?
I'm just stressed. I have a test tomorrow. Don't worry about it.
Whatever. So we've got you're having Dr. Pepper because mm-hmm. there is a nurse that is in here. Okay.
And also I have a test tomorrow, so day drinking was not an option.
Okay. Well, I decided, and I think it is appropriate, that my drink is The Night is Dark and Full of Terrors.
Ooh.
This one calls for I actually have the recipe because I realized, despite the fact that it doesn't say this, that there was no way I was going to drink the recipe as written. It calls for 6 ounces of Blavod black vodka. I added food coloring to vodka and it is black. 3 ounces of Chambord and 1 ounce of simple syrup. It says combine in a cocktail shaker with ice, shake well, strain into a chilled glass. I'm sorry. This is straight freaking alcohol. And I halved it and it is way better than I expected it to be. I will say that. But it is dark and full of terrors and it matches
it's
my
black as night. It's like Snow White's the evil queen's first concoction of the black as night.
It actually and part of what I love about this is it matches my nail polish, which is
it
called
does.
Wicked.
I didn't notice that.
It's Essie Wicked. And this is like the exact same color. It's kind of perfect.
I'm sorry if no one could follow that Snow White reference, but Dad, you'll understand.
That's right. So Snow White in the beginning, well, not in the beginning.
No, it's not the beginning. When
the Wicked Queen decides, like, it's time to get crazy, she makes herself a concoction that's
mm-hmm.
dark and full of terrors.
Anyway, so the sections for episode 3, What is Dead May Never Die, The Night's Watch, Winterfell, Renly's Camp, Pike, King's Landing, and the King's Road. Jesus. Let's start with Night's Watch. That's where our episode starts, and it's also one of the shorter ones.
Yes. So basically, this one starts with Craster. He's, as we saw at the end of the last episode we watched, Craster hit John in the head for spying on him. He throws John into his keep and tells the Lord Commander, you guys are all leaving. This is ridiculous. Lord Commander's pissed. Lord Commander goes out and basically tells John, you fucked up. And it is obvious that the Lord Commander knows that Craster has been killing the boys and that he says that the gods they serve are crueler gods that Craster serves. And he's like that they need Craster. He asks John what he saw. And he says, there was this creature that took the baby. And he's like, I can tell you right now, out here, you're going to see that creature again. And so he gives, and I find this interesting, that apparently, once again, John lost Longclaw. and he hands it back to her. He's like, "You don't lose this again." It's kind of like that whole lightsaber thing.
Yeah, it really is.
With like, you know, need to stop losing your lightsaber. And then Sam gives Gilly his mother's thimble. And he's giving it to her for safe keeping as a gift. And there was a lot of Rudolph Red Nosed Reindeer vibes with this.
I think you're cute. Sam, I think you're cute. She thinks I'm cute.
Tell me that isn't dead on. Tell me that wasn't entirely accurate. He sounds sick the entire movie, especially with the nose cap on. I'm cute! And he flies for the first time. Don't tell me that isn't completely accurate. You can't.
I'm not saying it. I'm just moving on. All right,
Winterfell.
Winterfell's super short also. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Bran is quote-unquote in summer.
Jesus, that makes it sound like bestiality, Mom.
No, he is warging into summer, and so he is wandering about as summer. They wake Bran up. Actually, Summer wakes Bran up by standing on his chest, kind of like Yang does to me in the morning. Yeah, and
or like I used to in like your doorway.
Yeah, no, you were right by my bed. You just like appear.
It was, I'm sorry. Scary. I was a thing of horror.
Yeah,
I was one of the twins from The Shining.
A bit. Anyway, so Maester Loen has a discussion with Bran about the fact, oh, these are just dreams. All these things are just stories. Because Bran's like, hey, your magic's a thing. Rickon had the same dream that I did. And he's like, oh, but what about, you know, all these dreams that you have that don't come true? I study the higher mysteries. I never was magic. The dragons are gone, giants are dead, and the children of the forest are forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So,
which is, again, like it's foreshadowing for seasons way down the road that are still pretty boring as a storyline.
Yeah, my roommate Sophie was, again, she's always in the room whenever I'm watching these, but so she's practically watching along, but she doesn't mind about spoilers. But she was like, is any of that true? And I was like, no. And then I'm just like, yeah, no. And I gave her a little backstory on that, but either way. Let's go to Pike.
Yeah, Pike's short. And it's also a character we don't care about.
All right, so Theon talks to Yara. Yara wanted to see who he was. It's still weird about the incest thing. Imagine if you will, if you had a brother and he was taken away at a young-ish age, maybe like 10-ish or whatever. So a couple years go by and then he comes back one day randomly. And you're just at the port, you see him, and you're like, I want to test his character. And so you flirt with him, and then you get on a horse, and he starts feeling you up. Do you A, push him away and be like, that's gross, you're my brother? B, do you let him? Or C, do you go all the way? But it's just like, she chose a really weird answer out of those three. Not the weirdest, but a weird one for sure. So it's so bizarre to me that she even let this happen. Yara is supposed to be a badass. Like, she's totally open about like doing sexual stuff, but with your brother, that is disgusting. Anyway, Balon wants to
pillage.
Balon wants to pillage the northern coast. He gives Yara 30 long ships to take to take Deepwood Mott, with which is the Glovers.
I think that's right.
He gives Theon one single ship called the Sea Bitch to raid fishing villages. I will give them that. That was funny. The Sea Bitch. We thought it was perfect for you. Theon's like, tells hey! them. Theon tells them to ally with the North to get Casterly Rock in the end. Like, after the war is done, they'll give him Casterly Rock, which is the Lannisters' home. And but he's just like, we do not sell. We will take what we want. We take what we get. And then Theon's like, what about when you failed at your rebellion? Did you take what you wanted then? And then he backhands him into a table. Oh, no, sorry. Balon slaps the shit out of Theon. But then Theon brings up a separate but very true point. Very John Mulaney. It's like, he brings up a separate but very interesting point of, you gave me and once I come home, you're like, you changed. It's been years and you gave him up to be with the Starks. Did you not think that he would change? That's not how life goes, dude. Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you? And then it's like they're not even happy that he's even there. Like, they just hate him. And so it's very confusing of like what choices he makes in the end. But yeah. And again, Balon doesn't address any of his like complaints about, you gave up your last boy to the Starks and I come home and you don't give a shit. Like, I'm home. You are my family. Why don't you care about me? And then Balon's like, just walks out of the room. I'm like, that's not answering any question other than you hate him.
Well, right. But it makes me question why Theon makes the choices that he makes in this episode.
I agree. But at the same time, if, again, picture yourself in his position. I still wouldn't have chosen the thing that he chose. But
I would take all of that as a, fuck it, you don't want me?
Exactly.
Fuck you.
I think that it's fair for Balon to give Yara more ships than Theon. I think that's fair, but I think that him completely dismissing Theon as a person is very rude, and it is awful, and I hate it. Anyway, then later on, Theon writes a letter to Robb warning him about the pillaging that might happen, that will happen in the future, but then he burns it like a little bitch, and then Theon consecrates his faith in the drowned god to prove himself to his family by having salt water poured on him and then being like, what has dead men ever done? And so
I will say this, having now read the books, the hours and hours and hours spent you with the drowned god family is fucking hell. So this is edited. It's nice.
Yeah, but it's still boring as all get out. Anyway.
Well, it's also, I'm going to say this because I watched the after parts to this episode.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and the showrunners, Benioff and whatever his name is.
Isn't it Weiss?
Yeah, Benioff and Weiss. So they're talking about, oh, Theon's such a fascinating character because he's weak-willed and it's so cool. And it's like, not cool to the rest of us. The rest of us don't care about the Starks. Yeah, we're Stark
people.
And
there are choices made later that are even worse. Anyway, then let's go over to the King's Road, which is at the very end.
Yes, King's Road.
So Arya can't sleep, and she talks to Yoren about it. She asks how he sleeps after seeing such horrible things. Because obviously he has. He's at the Night's Watch. You don't go there without seeing horrible, horrible things. And he tells her that his brother was stabbed in the heart in front of him, and he would say his killer's name every night before he went to sleep. And he eventually got his revenge on him. And so she's like, a list of people I want revenge on. There's so many. Yeah. And then the Gold Cloaks show up. And they have to get ready for an attack. Yoren tells Arya and Gendry to run if there's trouble, which obviously there will be. Yoren gets shot, but kills several people before he actually goes down.
He doesn't get shot with a gun. He gets shot with a crossbow. And what he says, I love this. He gets shot with a crossbow. And he's like, I hate crossbows. They're just so hard to reload, and start slashing people. And
that was really fun.
You know, he does a lot of damage before he gets taken in.
Also, a very important part is that seems small, but it isn't. A fire is set, and the three caged prisoners are like freaking out because it's coming towards them and they don't have an escape. They're about to be burned alive. And the Jaqen and Hakkar yells at Arya and is just like, hey, sweet boy, please help us. Please give us an axe, anything to get out of here. And she, even in the midst of all this chaos, she does give him an axe. And he is seems very grateful. And so he will be in her debt, and that will come into play later. And it's very important. Then later on, a guard catches Arya and takes Needle away from her. He says he might pick his teeth with the blade, which comes back to the line later. That's the only reason why I mentioned it. And is taking them to Harrenhal as prisoners. Reminder, Harrenhal is under the Lannisters' control. It was given to Janice Slint, but obviously it's not anymore since he's going to the Night's Watch. So we'll talk a little bit more about Harrenhal later.
Yes.
And the, like, who owns it and whatever. But it's basically run by the Lannisters. Yep. The blonde bitch got an arrow in the leg, and he's like, hey, you'll have to carry me. And they're like, no. And so they stab him.
There's a part you miss. The blonde bitch, when they're all getting up and running and trying to, like, kind of flee from the City Watch, grabs Gendry's helmet.
Yeah, he's no. The helmet's right next to him when he dies. I was going to mention that. But they ask for Gendry once they gather all the hostages around, and they're like, hey, we're looking for Gendry. Where is he? And then Arya, noticing that the helmet is right next to the blonde bitch, I'm sorry that that's just his name. He was never really given a name. And it's not going to be Dave because he's a little bitch. So Daves aren't bitches. Daves aren't bitches. And so he essentially... Arya is just like, oh, you want Gendry? You've already got him. He never leaves that helmet behind. And so they buy it, and obviously. And now they're going to Harrenhal. But Gendry's face when she's like, you want Gendry? It was just like, what the hell, dude? I didn't give you away.
Right.
I could tell them a lot of things about you, but no.
Yes.
You had to say something about me. And she's like, but she covers for him. So that's nice. Yeah. All right, let's go to maybe King's Landing or Renly's camp.
They're kind of even to me. Let's do King's Landing because I think Renly's camp
is more entertaining.
Interesting for a while. Yes. Yeah. So we start at King's Landing with Shay arguing with Tyrion because she doesn't she doesn't like being hidden away. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to make you I'm going to have you pose as a kitchen wench. And she's like, no, I'm not a kitchen wench. Then we've got Cersei is having a meal with Sansa. And this whole sequence is basically character development for Sansa and for Cersei. So we get to see this. They're discussing Sansa's coming wedding or someday wedding with Joffrey. And Sansa's like teary. She's anxious. Cersei keeps calling her, you're going to do your duty, little dove. And that night, Shay appears in Sansa's bedchamber as a handmaiden. And Sansa's kind of like, but Sansa's actually kind of bitchy and high-handed with her.
I hated that. And then, when Shay seems
that person.
Well, when Shay seems calm and understanding about her being upset, because clearly she's about to cry, and Shay's just like, "Do you want me to leave?" And then Sansa's like, "Just brush my hair, and just don't ask any questions. Just brush my hair." And then Tyrion is talking to Pycelle about having Marcella married to the heir of Dorne, the Martells, and not to tell the queen. Then he also tells Varys about marrying her to Theon Greyjoy, which is the most ridiculous of them all, if you can believe it. Then Tyrion tells Littlefinger about marrying her to Robin Arryn, which is also ridiculous, but less so than Theon.
This is a great disinformation campaign, we gotta say.
Yes, it's great. And he also offers, like, but Littlefinger's like, but what's in it for me? And then he's just like, well, the admiration of your people. And he's like, you know, I don't care about that. And then he's just like, okay, fine, you get Harrenhal. Just giving away Harrenhal again. And he's like, but Harrenhal's haunted. And then Tyrion's like, then burn it down for all I care, or like take it down, but you'll still be a Lord of the Riverlands, one of the most powerful. And he's like, okay, I can do that. And then just all test their loyalties. And then later, Cersei is upset at Tyrion for selling Marcella to the Martells in Dorne. So clearly Pycelle was the one who squealed. And she would have known that it was a plot if more than one person went to her about that. So clearly it's just Pycelle, at least in this case. I think that it wasn't really a fair experiment, all things considered, only considering the fact that he offered more to Littlefinger individually than any other person. So it would make sense for Littlefinger not to tell because he had more of a stake in it. Like Varys didn't care.
Yeah, I see what
Pycelle
you mean.
Didn't have something, but either way. Littlefinger.
This is interesting, though. So Littlefinger does come back and. They find the Grand Maester in bed. So like Littlefinger's like coming back to talk to Tyrion, but they found the Grand Maester in bed with a whore. They threaten. I love this.
The Littlefinger seems important though, because Tyrion, Littlefinger's like, hey, do I not get Harrenhal? And he's like, no, you don't. And he's like, I don't want to be part of your schemes. And he's like, but what if my scheme involved Catelyn Stark? And then Littlefinger's like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll do that. I'll see Catelyn again. Betrayed and essentially murdered her husband, I will still see Catelyn again. She'll love me.
Right. So part of what Tyrion is trying to set up here is he wants to send Littlefinger as an envoy to Catelyn Stark to get Jaime back, because he knows like sending him to Robb Stark won't work. So he wants to send...
Because Robb has the best interests of all of the men in the war, as well as his sisters at heart, while Catelyn really only cares about her daughters, which is very selfish of her considering the...
And this will come back to haunt all of us. So, Tyrion also then finds out the Grand Maester, obviously, they find him, he's in bed with a whore. He brings like Shagga or one of the other stone crows, and they're like, "Let's cut his foot and feed it to the goats."
And then Shagga or whoever it is says, "There are no goats." And then Tyrion says, "Well, make do." And it's just funny. He has
Peter Dinklage is so great in this role. I'm sorry, he's fabulous.
He is. He has Bronn cut Pycelle's beard. He basically says that, oh, you let John Arryn die if you didn't poison him directly. You didn't do anything to stop it, did you? And Pycelle doesn't exactly deny it. He's just kind of flabbergasted.
I do want to say one thing. So Pycelle has some lines in here that I found very interesting. He's like, I've been a servant of the Lannisters since the days of the Mad King. In other words, he has been working for them since the way back. And throughout their time, throughout Robert's time, he's not serving Robert. He never did.
Big surprise.
And look, I'm a servant of the Lannisters. And of course, he's kind of begging with Tyrion because Tyrion's a Lannister, not knowing that Tyrion doesn't give a fuck about the Lannisters as a clan necessarily. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. They cut off his beard. They put him in a black cell.
Yeah. Then Tyrion's talking to Varys, and Varys tells a riddle about how money means power, essentially. There was this one line that I think only me, you, and Dad would really care about, the way it's phrased. You don't know what I'm talking about. It's funny, though. I had a weird association. Varys was talking about Ned's death and basically who's responsible for it. Well, who was responsible? Joffrey, the executioner, or somebody else? It was an Ellery Queen-ass phrase question. And I was just like, I don't know. Tell me, Ellery, after this commercial break.
Somebody else.
Or somebody else. I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ. It just sent me back to watching Ellery Queen. I need to rewatch Ellery Queen now.
Oh, dear God. Just, no, not this weekend.
You're good. I always forget who done it. So it kind of works out.
It's whatever. Anyway, go ahead. We're not talking about Ellery Queen.
That's it for King's
Landing. That's it for there. We've got the Renly camp. So the Renly camp, we've got Renly and his Queen Marjorie Tyrell.
She has the weirdest line in this scene. It is the most on the nose line you could possibly have. It's kind of like the Arya bear exposition at the in the first episode of like, that's Jaime Lannister, the queen's twin brother. It was very similar to that, where like Loras and Brienne of Tarth, we don't know it's Brienne yet, she's a girl, and it is unknown that she is a girl yet, who's fighting him, and they're fighting, and Margaery and Renly and all the others are watching, and Margaery just stands up and goes, Loras, Highgarden. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Why was that her first line?
Because she's cheerleading her brother. So yeah, so they're watching Loras fight, and Brienne gets Loras down on the ground and tells him to yield, and he does. He yields, and she takes off her helmet, and Renly's like, wow, you know, you did a great job, especially, you know, regardless of whether you're a girl, what do you want? And she's like, I want to be in your Kingsguard. And he's like, okay. Catelyn arrives at this point. She is an envoy, obviously, from Rob. And they're like, oh, so great to see you. You know, you're here from Winterfell. She's like, I'm here for my son, Rob, who is also king in the north. Dude, and there's a lot of back and forth about this. Loras taunts Catelyn, and Catelyn just, you know, she responds. She does really well with, you know, responding to these people, handling like courtly elements of this. Renly swears he's going to avenge Ned, and she's kind of like, yeah, sure. And they walk through the camp, and Renly's kind of like, oh, I've got all the might of the Stormlands and the Reach. And she's like, yeah, these are all summer nights and winter is coming. It's like
But also what she said is that this is really just a game to you. All of these 100,000 men, their lives are just a game to you. You don't care about this the way that you should. And because obviously he doesn't have any battle background or war background at all. So it's basically just what he has seen others do, and based off of nothing really. And so she really doesn't have much faith in him.
Because he doesn't have the gravity that comes with a warrior, right? You know, that, you know, it's not just not money. It's not just, you know, playing with numbers in your head. It's not a simple thing to commit people's lives.
Then he's like, well, Brienne, you take care of Catelyn. And Brienne was basically brought in immediately as Kingsguard. She just immediately started following him around, just being like, I'm your Kingsguard now. And I'm just like, don't you want to play
a dire wolf?
But no. So she takes Catelyn to her tent. This is going to be a good friendship later. Spoiler.
Things away, Natalie.
Not the reason why. Either way, that's more important. But then basically Catelyn's like, well, thank you. You fought really well, Lady Brienne. And Brienne's just like, Brienne's enough. I'm no lady. And then walks her to her chambers. Later on, Renly and Loras are getting it on. And Loras is annoyed that that Renly let Brienne be a part of the Kingsguard because he was already embarrassed enough. And he then says no to sex and tells Renly to bed his sister, who he hasn't slept with 2 weeks after the wedding night. So it's like, dude, you need to screw her at some point. We're expecting an heir. And
oh, by the way, consummating marriage is a thing.
Yeah, exactly. You haven't consummated the marriage. And Margaery, this is going to be a theme with Margaery about like not consummating a marriage, for the most part. Anyway, then Margaery goes to Renly and tries to tempt him with sex. She notices he isn't hard and he blames the wine. And then she suggests her brother can come in and help, or she can turn around
to have him.
But to be honest, like, at least she's being accommodating. It's not like she's blaming him or anything. It's more just he doesn't find her that attractive, even though it's Natalie Dormer. So, God.
Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. Who doesn't find Natalie Dormer attractive?
And then so she just, she's like, all right, whatever will make you comfortable. You are my king, and we are, and we have to strengthen our alliance. So we need to get me pregnant, and I'm open to any way that you would like. I can bring Loras in. I will do whatever you want in your own time, but we have to do it soon. So just be aware of that. So it was kind of a nice scene of her like being understanding, but also like, hey, we have to do this.
No, I mean, she is definitely very calculating in how to.
Oh, Marjorie's great at that.
She is. But what I like about Marjorie in the scene is, number one, she knows exactly what's going on. Renly's in denial still. Like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not interested in your brother. It's like, bullshit. Everybody knows. And she's like, look, you have a lot of other places you need to lie. Let's not have lies in the marriage. And I think I love the way that, and she's very gentle with him. She's like, look, you save those for court. Let's just get done what we need to get done here. You can do whatever else you want, but you know, we got to consummate this marriage. We got to get things done right. So whatever.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the episode, isn't it?
That's it.
What were your best parts of this episode?
Brienne. I love Brienne. She's great. Tyrion's plan is really cool. I like seeing him be calculating. And considering the fact that two of the Hands have been murdered, I can see why. He wants to make sure that he doesn't get murdered and or accused of treason or whatever. I think that in general, I think he's doing a better job of it than Ned did, obviously. But then again, he's more cutthroat and a little bit more willing to get his hands dirty, as in like morals dirty and morals like gray and all that stuff. Arya, I really like Arya thinking quick on her feet and also helping out the people in the cage because there's people too. I mean, just give them the axe. Hopefully they won't murder you in your sleep. Marjorie, I really like this episode. I really like Marjorie as a character in general. I think that the way she plays the game is probably most similar to what I would do. I think that, like, as a woman, that's probably what I would go for if I wanted to be a social climber. That's mm-hmm. more of this way I would do it. It depends on my age. Like, if I was younger, I would go the Sansa route, but I'd be a little less whiny than her. But as if I was like around Marjorie's age, I probably would have gone the route she did. But then again, I also wouldn't like, first of all, I wouldn't suggest my brother come in. But at least like, I don't know, like her idea of like, well, he can get you started and then I'll come in and it'll be fine. And I'll just hop on. It'll be great. But I think in general, like,
I'm not sure I need that visual. Thank you.
I don't. You don't need to worry about it. Anyway, I like Marjorie as a character. I think she's good at playing her loyalties well and making people feel comfortable around her. Yes. And I think that's a huge part that, like, Cersei's not really good at. Like, she's not good at making people feel comfortable around her. Well, she used to be, but now she's just a bit more of a stone cold bitch because she has more power now.
I'll be honest. I think Cersei was probably a lot more like Marjorie back in the day.
Oh, for sure. But I don't know. It's just, I kind of like what Marjorie's doing at this point. It gets weird later on, but whatever. That's just how things are in the show. Anyway, those are my best parts.
So my best parts, Tyrion was an obvious one to me. Tyrion, obviously, I think has a great arc here. I really like Yoren with the King's Guard.
Oh, I like Yoren. I also like Mr. Lewin.
Right. But Yoren sacrifices himself for these people that he's supposed to be escorting up to the Night's Watch. And I think that that's pretty huge. I did not write down Arya. I can't believe it because I really should have. I love Arya pretty much anything. She is one of my people. And so if I don't write down Arya, it is a mistake.
Well, season 5 gets a bit dodgy, but I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so I had Catelyn also I like in this episode. I feel like she handles, that she's being taunted about her son. She's being taunted about, oh, you're just like this little province kind of thing. And she takes it and she turns it on its head. It's like, you don't know what you're doing.
I agree. I like her better in the next episode, but go ahead.
I had question marks by Sansa. I like the fact that she is, I like the fact that she's trying to play the game. It's just that she's really very terrible. And much like, I guess the difference between her and Theon is she's weak but sympathetic. Theon is not sympathetic to me. I had Marjorie. I like Marjorie. And Brienne, I hate that they kind of try to turn her into a girl power thing later, but I really love her as a character generally.
Yeah.
What were yours?
The Greyjoys. Every single one of them can go fuck themselves and each other. Just leave me alone and go away and fuck off to your island somewhere and just leave everyone else alone. Theon, if you want to come back to Rob, fine, but fuck off if you don't. Mess with him. Just don't. And also, you know that he would squash you like a bug. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, what is wrong with you? Also, he's your brother. Like, in spirit. Like, you called him your brother for God knows how many years.
You swore fealty to him I don't know how many times, motherfucker. Your word king in the north, like, you fucking loser.
Also, Shay for existing and whining. I did like her reaction with Sansa, but I still... I don't know. And also Sansa, I used to have a question mark by it, but I agree. She's just really annoying. But I also think that she's doing better about just kind of acting brainwashed in front of like Cersei and in front of everyone else. But obviously, she has that moment where she's looking in her mirror and she's like, all right, this is the face I have to put on, but I'm just dying inside because I watched my father be beheaded. My brother's off at war. My mother, God knows where she is. Arya, God knows where she is. And it's a mess. Like her brothers are up in Winterfell. Like she's just so isolated at this point and she's surrounded by her enemies. So I think that do I like what they do with her character going forward? Sure. Right now she's still annoying, so that's why she's the worst part for me. But I still kind of liked her in this episode, kind of, but not really.
Is that everything?
Mm-hmm. Sorry for the rant.
No, you're fine. I'm going to take up your Sansa thing. The reason that I felt more sympathetic to her in this episode is the taunts that she's getting at the dinner table are basically like, hey, maybe Joffrey's gonna bring your brother's head to you, you know, that kind of thing. And she's like, I am so looking forward to getting married to Joffrey. Yay.
I also liked Tommen's reaction. Like Cersei's just asks Tom, like Tommen asked, hey, is Joffrey gonna kill Sansa's brother? Like at the dinner table, I'm like, children are very upfront. But also, he asks that, and then Cersei's like, well, would you like if he did? She asks Tommen. And because I thought it was directed towards Sansa, but Tommen actually answers. And Tommen's like, no, I don't think I would like that. And I'm like, aw, yay. Good for you, Tommen. Not a bloodthirsty idiot. Good for you.
Your Tommen character development.
Tommen has a little bit later on, but he still is just a blah, boring, basic bitch of a character.
Like Marcella is kind of like, she's just very interested in the wedding. Oh, I'll get a new dress, blah blah blah, whatever.
But what other priorities does she have?
I find Sansa more sympathetic than Theon, who is definitely 100% a worse part in this episode. And it's going to be a worse part for quite some time. So yeah, Theon, the whole fucking Greyjoys, I agree. The Grand Maester, who is just vile. I'm sorry.
Oh, Pycelle, yeah.
He's just awful. Renly's on my list. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, why are you denying that you're in love with Loras?
Screw your wife.
Yeah, just screw your wife. Do what you're supposed to do. Get it done. I mean, that's all there is.
And she's even offering other methods. Like, just do something and then screw her. She's a gorgeous woman. Even if you're gay, you can recognize that she's attractive to other people. So just like,
yes.
I'm not saying like you'd have to do it all the time, but like until you get an heir, like you're kind of desperate for something here.
Yeah. I also hate the City Watch in this, and particularly the guy who takes Needle. I'm with Aria on all of that. So that's pretty much it. What grade did you give this episode?
I gave it a B.
Oh, I gave it a B minus. And it's mostly because it's just a nothing episode to me. It's not
great.
I don't know why it's a bad episode. It might be a B. It's
kinda... I don't know. Maybe it is a B minus. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just not. It doesn't have a lot of redeeming quality to me. It's kind of like.
Oh, also, I don't think I mentioned a best part, Robin's spirit.
Richard Madden exists somewhere in this universe.
He exists, and there is a letter written to him. So, well, and then burned. But his name is mentioned.
And he spells it Rob on this rewatch.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. I love Rob on this rewatch, but also Richard Madden's.
I love Rob, period. Come on.
He's so hot.
I love Richard Madden.
And he's such a good actor.
He's so good. He's so good.
All right. So, episode 4, Garden of Bones. Sections for this. Lannister Camp, King's Landing, Renly's Camp, Red Waste / Karth, and Harrenhal.
Okay. Did you include like the Stannis thing with the Renly's Camp thing?
The Renly's Camp thing is like including the outskirts. You know what I mean?
All right, cool. It's on the same page for me. I just, you know, I wanted to
probably leave it for last.
Yes, I think so too.
Do you want to get King's Landing over with?
Or the Red Waste?
Let's do the Red Waste then.
No, let's go ahead and do King's Landing.
No, let's do Red Waste. I want to get Red Waste over with more.
this is another one of those situations where I absolutely hate that they named the episode after words involved in this side thing that no one gives a shit about. So
Garden of Bones. I'm like, yeah, so it has nothing to do with anything else.
Right, so Daenerys is out in the Red Waste. One of her blood riders comes back with a new horse that he got in Karth. And he's like, let's go and they'll receive us in Karth. They all go to Karth. There's a desert, and Jorah tells her there's a desert that's around Karth that's called the Garden of Bones, because basically if you don't get in the door, they're going to leave you out there to die. They are met at the gates of Karth by a group called the 13, which is like their council, I guess.
They're all merchants, I think.
They're all merchants. It's just like a city council kind of thing, whatever. Yeah. They basically are like, well, you know, we want to see your dragons. She's like, nope. let me in and then you can see the dragons, or let me in and we'll talk about seeing the dragons. And they're all kind of like, well, if you're not going to show us the dragons, we're not letting you in. And so they all go inside, but there is one guy, Zaro, who champions Daenerys. It's almost makes it sound like because she's a girl. So he champions her, he vouches for her with his blood. They open the gates to her, and you know, she gives this basically total bitchy Targaryen speech before that.
We will burn you first. And then, but then they're like, but you said you'd die. And she's like, but I'd burn you if I could.
It's so fucking stupid. But in any case,
I can understand why she didn't want to show them her dragons, because then they would kill her and kill all of them and take the dragons, just like Jorah said. So, I mean, like, I understand her tactic there, but we'll get to a point where you just got to do something to help your people not starve or dehydrate or whatever.
Right.
Anyway.
But they open the gates, and it looks like this amazing, like, paradise on the sea. So it's lovely.
All right, time for Lannister Camp.
Lannister men
are talking and they're attacked by Grey Wind, and the Starks attack. Rob talks to Roos Bolton after battle.
Oh my god.
This is our first mention of Roos Bolton. It will not be the last by a long shot. He's very important. His bastard son is also very important, but we haven't gotten to them yet. Anyway, he
discusses flaying. He's like, we need to get more information from these people. Let's flay them. And Rob's
which
like,
is no. Basically, it's their banner. A flayed person is basically someone who's been skinned alive, yes, and are like put on an X, sometimes upside down on an X, like wooden cross thing. It's mm-hmm. awful. I don't know why someone would be proud to have that as their banner, but okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like some people have banners like with like a stag and a crown, like Renly. No, they have a flayed man on theirs. Anyway, then they will still hold the prisoners because that's what Roose is like bitching about. He's like, there are too many people to keep prisoner. We don't have enough room. We don't have enough resources. We don't want to have to like worry about like supplying
feeding them.
Feeding them and all that stuff. And I can understand that, but at the same time, Rob doesn't want to like just act like he's super bloodthirsty and will just kill everybody.
Well, like he feels like people are disposable. He doesn't feel like people are disposable.
Right. And then there is this girl, Talissa. I always said Talisa. I don't know why. Talissa is a nurse trying to amputate one of the Lannister man's legs, and Rob helps her and is oddly aroused. Yes.
I gotta tell you, the dialogue in this scene is identical to dialogue in a scene from Gone with the Wind, which I watched way too many times as a child. There's like this amputation. He's like, no,
don't take my foot.
I mean, it's identical. It is identical dialogue.
Even with the amputation, that's hilarious.
And it's delivered in the same way. It is identical. If you put them side by side, it's going to be like, no.
Like Rob says something along the lines of, it was good that you were here for him. Like, he was lucky you were here. And then she says, he was unlucky you were. And I'm like, yeah. Jesus, that is a Gone with the Wind line. It's not, yeah. But like, it's close enough. Either way, he's oddly aroused by the sawing of an amputated leg. It's kind of like the Shang and like Li Shang in Mulan being punched in the face and then be like, I'm oddly aroused by that.
What he is attracted to is her competence. And I think that it can't be underestimated as a respect of another person. Like, she's good at something that he's not good at, but he respects it as a calling. So the fact that she is good at medical stuff and that she cares about what she does, he respects that. And so I think that's the whole deal for him.
I think he talks to her after, and Talissa is very anti-war, and she's just like, oh, but these are just like mill farmers. They didn't ask for this. They're following orders, blah, blah, blah. And it's the whole Nazi conundrum of like, they were just following orders. I'm just like, it's still a complicated thing, but like Rob is just like, but it's the idea of the thing. Like, they were wearing their colors. They were marching towards my men. Well, I kind of stole away the night, but either way, he had to do something. And she clearly like just doesn't really understand how war is supposed to happen. Like, I think that she thinks it's stupid.
Do you know
that it's
war happening. Is?
Yeah. I think she does bring up a good point about like, oh, well, do you have a plan after? Like, what's going to happen? Like, who's going to be on, like, are you going to kill Joffrey? And he's like, yes, that's the plan. And then she's like, all right, well, then who's going to be on the Iron Throne? And he's like, well, I don't want the Iron Throne. And she's like, okay, but then who's going to end up on the Iron Throne? And he's like, didn't think that far. Hopefully someone who likes me. I don't know. It makes him think. I think that in general, this is where I'm getting into spoiler territory. Obviously, this is setting up a romantic subplot, so it's not that big of a shock. I think, I don't know, she's fine. I just want better for Rob. I don't know.
I will say this, the actress, Una Chaplin, she's beautiful. She is grand, great grand, whatever, from Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's fun. And her mother, I think, was the queen in the old Michael York, Three Musketeers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I absolutely love that older Three Musketeers, Four Musketeers is my favorite. It has Richard Chamberlain in it. It's amazing.
You know, I haven't seen that in years, but
it's so good.
I love Michael York. So either way, I think, I don't know, what I was kind of thinking was for a match for Rob, I think an anti-war thing. It just, I don't know. I don't like her I'm not like other girls kind of vibe of, well, I don't think the way you do. I don't think war's a good idea. And I'm like, you're a revolutionary girl. But I just,
yeah, nobody thinks war's a good idea.
Like, yeah, it's not that he wants to be killing people on a regular basis. Like, that's not the goal. The goal is just to get his sisters back.
Well, at this point, you know, he went to war to save his father. His father was killed. And now he's got to see it through on behalf of everyone who's gone to war with him.
Yeah, I wish that if they were going to go with a romantic subplot for Rob. Also, Rob is engaged. That's a big part of this. He's technically betrothed to one of the Frey girls. And obviously that's not ideal, but you made a promise. This might be an issue later. But I also think that if they were going to go with like someone to lead him astray from that honorable thing, I kind of wished that she was like a northern lady who was fighting for her people or something. Like, so she felt like the same responsibility. Like, there's a character later on who's like the lady of one of the houses who's like a big warrior girl who's much younger, but a similar idea of what I would want, like her be like really devoted to her people and just have like all of those interests at heart and not just be like, oh, war is bad, and then him be like, that's so hot. But I think I think that would be better if like there was like this northern like warrior who he like fell in love with and they kind of went to battle together and it was cool, you know. Yeah, that would be cool.
I will say this, it is actually worse in the books because the woman he falls for, it's kind of like, oh my God, really? I will also, and at some point I will discuss that in further detail, but I'm not going to do it right now.
Yeah, I'm really curious. You do it after the podcast, I'm curious.
I will, but you know, the part of it is that I kind of agree with you. I think what he is inspired by is her passion, not necessarily her anti-war
skin. So you could have that in a really cool warrior princess kind of way, and that would be badass. I'd love to see that. Like, I want somebody who's like an Arya grown-up that's just like cutting through bitches and just like being like, yeah, no, and also I'll help you and Grey Wind win this war, because clearly they're all riding on your back because Grey Wind's doing all the work.
But go, like, Grey Wind,
go Grey Wind, you're really pulling this war effort together. But I think that would be so much cooler. But then obviously you'd still have the conflict of, oh wow, I'm still betrothed to a Frey girl. I don't really want to be betrothed to a Frey girl. Hey, let's have sex now, kind of thing. But it would be so much cooler if she was a badass.
Yeah.
Nurses aren't badass in their own right. I just think that she's too much of a wishy-washy kind of like, war's bad. And I'm just like, a novel idea, sweetie. That's amazing. We'll there's just not much to her. Like, I don't know. She's pretty. She was in show off.
If you want to, I can talk about it now. Do you want me to talk about it now?
Go ahead. Do it. I want to know.
All right. So in the book, the woman that he falls for is just the daughter of some lord that is a bannerman of the Lannisters.
Oh.
So he gets injured.
The Juliet thing?
No, it's worse than that. So he gets injured in some battle and is taken to a castle, and she helps nurse him back to health. Doesn't do like the major nursing thing. She's just pretty. And so he like gets like, oh, hey, let's have babies together kind of thing. Basically.
I'm confused. Why was he in, was he captured or something?
No. So the battle occurred near this castle.
And the castle. So she was like, hey, I'm going to help my enemy real quick.
No, it wasn't even really. I'm probably fudging on some of the details here, but the way I understood it is they were taking all of the noble people who were injured to the castle for treatment.
rather than have them out in the field. And so he was a noble person and he was being treated and he was in the castle and she went to see him and she's like, "Ooh, he's lovely."
Well, he is, but I don't like that. And also, again, if no, they it sucks. It from the book, and change like it to a battle princess.
It ends up being a little Romeo and Juliet-y when, you know, they get betrothed or they get married like in the field and it's like fucking stupid shit.
But here's the thing, if they were going, like, there's enough conflict in him already being betrothed to somebody else technically, so you have enough conflict there already and enough like backlash
or
whatever.
Can I just say this, I haven't said a whole lot about like some of the stupidity of the romance as developed in the books versus what's developed in the show. I think that the showrunners and whatever negatives I may ever use with them had a far greater understanding of what an audience is looking for from a character development, character interchange standpoint than necessarily George R. R. Martin did.
Sure.
His idea of good sex in the books is like three thrusts and you're done. I'm not joking.
He's done quick.
He uses that multiple times. So I'm kind of thinking that maybe that's the only good sex he's ever had. It's kind of sad.
But again, if they changed it from the book already, just make her a warrior princess and make her cool.
I'm kind of with you on that. Although, like,
I don't want her to be a Jenny from Forrest Gump. Like,
she's supposed to be somebody. She's supposed to be somebody who is not really into it. I mean, she's not like an advocate for anti-war. She's not an advocate for really anything. And
she's boring.
That's part of the reason that I feel like at least they made her an advocate for something in the show, not just, hey, it's a pretty girl. And of course, in the book, like, she's blonde and Lannister looking. I mean, it's like, it's just whatever. And she's not from Volantis. She's from some generic, you know, like, city in the Lannister. Yeah, Lannister area. It's like, it's just
Lannister dumb. Land.
Lannister land, right? It's just dumb. And that's all I have to say about that. But all I can say about what is in the book is it is stupider than what's in the show. And I know that what's in the show is kind of stupid.
Yeah, no, I would just prefer if she was a warrior princess. That would be so much cooler. Rest my case. Anyway,
let's go to King's Landing.
Yeah, Joffrey wants to punish Sansa for her brother's actions and has Meryn Trant beat her and tear her clothes while she cries, and he has a crossbow trained on her. Tyrion is the one to stop it, not anybody else. And then
Meryn Trant strips and beats her. He doesn't just tear her clothes. He like punches her in the stomach and shit.
He beats her.
Ugh.
He beats her.
Mm.
You'll listen back and you'll feel stupid. I said it correctly this time. Dad sent me a literal voice memo of me saying that. And I was like, I was in a weird mood. Like, I felt really weird.
Pointing out once again that this is an inappropriate thing to say to your mother. Moving on.
I know, and I'm sorry. I just wanted to correct something. Hi, Dad. Anyway, then Meryn Trant thinks that he's like threatening Joffrey when he's just like, hey, don't do that. I'm going to slap you about the head.
He thinks Tyrion is threatening.
I know Tyrion's threatening. And then Tyrion says, Bronn, the next time Meryn speaks, kill him. That was a threat. See the difference? I love that line.
Yeah.
And then obviously Sansa has to act brainwashed when Tyrion's like, hey, I'm sorry that my nephew's a bitch, and she's just like, I'm devoted to my beloved Joffrey. I love him so much. I can't wait to marry him. Thank you.
But the tenor of the conversation, to be clear, is that Tyrion's asking her, look, if you want this marriage contract to be ended, we can see what we can do, you know.
But what good would that do her at this point?
Right, and she knows it better than he does, and he realizes after she says it, he's kind of like,
Lady, you may survive us yet.
Lady Stark, you may survive all of us.
And then Bronn and Tyrion have this wonderful idea that Joffrey is just sexually frustrated, and so he needs some whores to come and help him out with that. So he gets Roz and another whore, who was the new girl from that couple episodes ago that was boring, are given to Joffrey, and he has them do some stuff to each other, like touch each other, take off each other, like one of their clothes, and then he's
this
just like
so vile. I cannot express to people who have not seen this show.
It's awful.
Joffrey's
gonna have peak awfulness in this episode.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Their peaks and valleys, this is a peak. He has them hit each other, like they start playfully hitting each other, obviously, like not doing anything awful, like a little bit of spanking or whatever. And then he's just like, he gives Roz his belt so that she could truly hit her. And then obviously that makes the other girl uncomfortable. She tries to like pull away. And then he ends up giving Roz like this metal and wood like banister thing from his desk, and is just like, hit her, and then you're going to go to my Uncle Tyrion after this, and you're going to show him what has happened here, and that will teach him a lesson. And then she's forced to, because he has a crossbow trained on them, she has to forcefully hit her with the metal and the wood and all that stuff, and it's awful, and I hate it.
Okay, a couple of things about this, and if you said this already, I got distracted by something, I apologize. The whole reason that he sends the whores is that he has a discussion with Bronn.
Yeah, I said that.
And I love Bronn's line, which is, there's no cure for being a fucking cunt.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I said C-unit last time, and I still feel disgusted
I hate that word more than any other curse word out there, and I love curse words. However, when we're describing Joffrey in this episode, 100%.
When describing Joffrey in general, he is one.
Right. And I will also say that when he tells Roz to use this instrument, it's got like the top of it is basically a stag's head with a bunch of antlers that are pointy and sharp. And I thought he was telling her to like shove it up someone.
That's what I thought too, but I think that he was just beating her. I think he would have specified. Horrible.
Yeah,
anyway, then Lancel brings Cersei's request for Pycelle's release to Tyrion. Tyrion knows that he's sleeping with his sister. Lancel's sleeping with Cersei, and Tyrion threatens to tell Joffrey, but he wants. And when Lancel starts begging, Tyrion's like, "Okay, fine, I won't tell Joffrey as long as you'll be my spy." And then he will release Pycelle because he doesn't want him on the council.
Couple of things. Background music for this whole thing is Reigns of Castamere.
Again, I don't recognize it when it's usually the like background music, whistles it.
I have to say this. I am embarrassed because I have mentioned before that I feel like I am score sensitive. Normally, I pick up on themes like in Star Wars or whatever. Downton Abbey. I didn't pick up on this as a background Lannister theme until like much later, until it was pointed out. I feel embarrassed about that because it has come back and come back and come back. Lancel, when he finds out that Tyrion knows he's sleeping with Cersei and like Tyrion threatens to go to Joffrey about it, Lancel screams like a little bitch, just like Joffrey did, like when Tyrion slapped him. I thought it was hilarious. It sounded exactly the same.
Going back to Reigns of Castamere being in the background, I think that it's interesting because I remember only one other time it's like mentioned to somebody else later on, but mm-hmm. the only time I remember them like singing it is at the end of season 2. So I was just like, oh, okay. And then obviously it comes back later in season 3 and it's more important then and all that stuff. There's literally an episode named after it. But I think that it's weird that they were setting it up so soon.
I know.
Now I'm just like, something's around the corner. Oh, God. and I don't think I ever recognized that. I don't know why it didn't register with me that that was the background music. Maybe I was just listening to the dialogue really closely and not the music. But I don't know. Either way.
Karen Hall and then we do the last part?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, so Karen Hall, and you get to see this
because they come up to Harren Hall. So the prisoners are brought up to Harren Hall by the Lannister and City Watch soldiers. They can see that the castle itself is very damaged. It had been, you can see that it was very large. And the stone has been melted. And they're like, what melts stone? And Arya's like, dragon fire. and they're like, what is that smell? And she's like, dead people.
And I'm like, and you lived in King's Landing. How do you not know the smell of dead people?
Yeah, seriously. So you get the sense that pretty much they're torturing prisoners every single day. They take some.
They're put into like a pen of some kind, and they're still like have like handcuffs on them, manacles. Yeah. And yeah, the mountain, who has been recast and will be recast again. So yes. When like Arya was like, "It's the mountain," I'm like, "Is it?"
I was just like, "Yeah, okay. I know." I was looking at way. Are you sure?
Yeah, he's recasted again later on. So and then they kind of stick with that guy, but like. He looks very, he's way more slim than the guy who came before him or the like guy who comes actual, after.
Like Hollywood maybe he got
slim
guy.
For the summer and was just like, yeah, since winter's coming, I'm just going to get slim. And then he's like, all right, for Harren Hall, I'm going to get slim. And then I'm going to buff up again. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. Either way, I'm imagining it's the same guy and he's just changing his
diet. It is not. It is very definitely not.
Anyway, then you see Arya in the rain at night reciting her list, which at this point is Joffrey, Cersei, Ellen Payne, and the Hound. Joffrey for obvious reasons, Cersei for letting it happen and being a little bitch, Ellen Payne for actually carrying out the sentence, and the Hound for something.
the Hound for killing the butcher's boy.
Yes, that makes sense.
I think that's pretty obvious. So then,
okay. So then not everyone remembers Micah, mother.
The next day, the mountain picks somebody else, and you see them like preparing for this. So you've got Hot Pie telling them like, "Oh, I talked to this other guy. And he says if you make eye contact, he won't pick you." And the guy who told him that gets picked, and Hot Pie pees himself.
And they choose the guy, and he's put in a chair, he's strapped to a chair, and he has this metal bucket with a rat in it attached to like his stomach area or like his chest, and basically they heat straps up,
so they've thought about this
and they heat up the bucket. Obviously they've thought about it, mom, they're torturing him. And they heat up the bucket to the point where the rat tries to burrow itself into his chest and like eat his way into his chest to get away from the fire, and he dies. Basically they get everyone, there's a tortured person and a killed person a day. It's they kill the tortured person. I don't know why I acted like there were two people. Anyway, they asked him questions about the Brotherhood, which nobody knows about right now, but will come into play later. And she notices that one of the guards who's especially rude is named Polliver. I think it might have been the guy who also stole Needle. And
I think so too, yes.
And so she adds both Polliver and the Mountain to her list. Then later on, things aren't looking good. And the Mountain chooses Gendry as the next victim. Unfortunately, shit. Because I love Gendry. Then
we
right
all
when
love
Gendry's
Gendry. Who doesn't love Gendry?
I love Gendry so much. And then Tywin comes in just when Gendry is about to be tortured. And Arya is the only one who doesn't kneel to him when he comes in. And then like one of the guards, I think Polliver, is just like, "Hey, bitch, get down," or like, "Guy, get down." And then Tywin's like, "Oh, she doesn't have to do that."
But he also says, "Yeah, you're so stupid."
Yeah, well, first of all, he also says that it's weird, it's stupid that you guys are like just killing the prisoners one person a day. Put them to use, make them build stuff, make them do what you want to do, like rebuild this place, like use them. And he asks Gendry, "Do you have a trade?" And he's like, "I was a blacksmith." And he's like, "All right, there you go, he'll be a blacksmith." Like, literally, just put these people to use, they're not going anywhere, so might as well not just kill them, might as well put their labor into use, because you don't want to hire more labor anyway. then he notices Arya, who is still standing up and not kneeling, and her like still stubbornly doing that, and because she's still worried about Gendry, she doesn't really care about Tywin or kneeling down to him.
And she also wants to get to Pollivore because she can see Needle in his belt.
Yes, yes. And also, so Pollivore's like pushing her back and all that stuff, and then Tywin's like, hey, stop, and you're so stupid. Obviously she's a girl, dipshit, and because he's not stupid.
I love Tywin, I'm sorry.
And then and then he asks, why are you dressed up as a boy? And she's like, safer for travel, my lord. And then he says, smart, you're smarter than all these like nut cases all put together. And then he's like, bring her to me, I need a new cupbearer. This is probably one of my favorite sections of Arya and Tywin. Like, it is one of my favorite duos, even though obviously they're not like on each other's side or anything. I just love this pairing. It is so fun for these next couple episodes of like her being his cupbearer and talking to Tywin while Tywin is like strategizing. It is such a great, like, this was such a good idea to put these two characters together. Like, her still being undercover because he doesn't know what Arya Stark looks like. And it's just, I love this so much. It's so good.
These are two good actors. And I feel like that we don't want to oversell it, but at the same time, it is really, really good.
Oh, who cares? I want to oversell it. It's great.
But the fact that he recognized this and he's like, let's put these people to use. Let's get labor.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, he's not a dumbass. Whatever.
Why are you killing these people when they could be of use to you? Like, come on.
Right, find out what their skills are. If they have no skills, maybe not, whatever. But, you know, obviously, and particularly someone like Gendry, who is an armorer. He's not just a smith. He is an armorer, which is a very specified smith skill. He can be of use in 1,000 different ways. Now, I think the reason he says he's a smith and not an armorer, which he has said before, is because he doesn't want them to know that he can make weaponry. And I will say that in the book, this whole Harrenhal thing goes on for longer. So just saying.
Figures. All right, let's go to Renly's camp.
Yay. I'm swirling my Dark Knight is Dark and Full of Terror stuff here because I put in some of that cool sparkly stuff that I used for Harry Potter, like the
unicorn blood stuff.
Yeah, so I don't, you can't see it. Can you see
it? I can't see, Mom. Anyway, Littlefinger visits and talks to Renly. Yeah, pretty, Mom. Littlefinger visits and talks to Renly and about like, hey, you know why I'm here. And Renly's like, yeah, you're trying to get a seat on my council or at least like keep your head on straight once we invade King's Landing. And then Littlefinger's like, yeah, no, I want my head more than I want to see your council, but sure. And then Littlefinger notices Loras going into Renly's tent and talks to Margaery, but Margaery kind of dodges his questions. She's just like, yeah, no, I'm loyal to my king. You need to go fuck off. And
I love the way she handles this though, because you know there's a lot of Littlefinger like, hey, you haven't had things consummated, blah blah blah, and she really handles that well. She's like, my king is my king,
and my husband is my king.
Okay,
so fuck off. Yeah. Then bye later God. On Catelyn is visited by Littlefinger and she knows that he betrayed Ned and he wants to start a relationship, and she just pulls a knife on him, and he says that they have both daughters, which is a fucking lie.
Liar, fucking liar, and he
offers the girls for Jaime, and Catelyn's like, Rob won't agree to those terms, and he's like, I'm not coming to Rob, I'm coming to you, and because you're a mother and you care the most about the girls, do you think that he gives a shit about his sisters? No. And I'm like, that's not fair. Then he gives her Ned's bones back as a sign of good faith. Those could be anyone's fucking bones. But also,
I don't know if he included in that any portion of his head. Yeah.
And also, like, yes, it's been a while, but it's still a decaying body. Like, you put that in a trunk. And she's like, oh, that's Ned. And I'm like, I don't know if that's...
I don't know what's in there, but she recognizes something about it. And
she basically, and he's like, oh, I'm so, he wants to go and comfort her, and she's like, get out. I mean, mm-hmm. And again, this is
she one loves of those, throwing people out of a room. That's what she's
best at. I will also say this. She is clearly loved her husband. And I don't think there was ever any question in my mind that she loved Ned.
It took time for them to get there, but yeah. Obviously because of circumstances beyond either of their control.
Right.
They were thrust into the situation, but they learned to love each other. Clearly, yeah. They loved each other in the first season. Like, they were all cuddled up in their bed, talking like normal people do. And, like, it's clear that they cared a bit about each other enough to, like, yeah. share a bed, to have 5 children. And it's just, like, obvious. Well, okay, you don't have to really care to have 5 children, but you know what I mean? They clearly...
But they care about their kids, too.
Yes. Well, Cersei cares about her kids. She did not care about her marriage, but like I think in general it's just
she cares about the father of her children.
Anyway, Renly and Stannis meet up. Renly mocks the Lord of Light bullshit, and then I love this line from him, born amid salt and smoke, is he a ham?
Can I also say he has another good line. He's like, "Oh, I thought you were just..." He's talking to Stannis and he's like, Stannis, I just thought you were charmless, rigid, and boring.
I love the whole, like, Stannis has the personality of a lobster through line, which is so true. He really does. Yes. Anyway, then Catelyn calls out the childishness of their, like, banter, and Stannis gives him a night to think and offers a place on the council and name him heir until he has a son, which obviously he thinks he's going to have a son with Melisandre. So it's not really even like an option, but obviously Renly's going to consider it. But at the same time, obviously it's not going, I keep saying obviously, like it's not going to happen because Renly has more, the better numbers and all that stuff, but he has the Lord of Light on his side. So nothing will go wrong.
Renly has this great, completely Les Miserables line though. He's like, you have no friends. It's like,
you have no friends. Then later on a boat outside of Renly's camp, Stannis and Davos talk about cutting off his fingers and him wearing knuckle bone.
Melisandre leaves, and as she's leaving, Renly like is talking to her, and she's like, you know, we're gonna win. She basically is like, Stannis is the one true king. The night is dark and full of terror. She says this so many times that we're probably a little bit numb to it, but it is the reason I'm drinking this drink, number one. But well, actually, this next section is the reason I'm drinking this drink. So proceed.
Okay, thank you. Stannis and Davos are talking about cutting off Stavos's fingers, and 4 of his fingers, we find out, and him wearing his knuckle bones like into battle or just every day.
Which around his neck. He has them around his neck. This is like a necklace. Big thing in the books. It's kind of like...
Anyway, Stannis asks Davos to... Davos used to be a smuggler. Stannis asks Davos to smuggle Melisandre somewhere, and it will be messy, apparently. Because Davos is like, can we not do it this way, Stannis? And Stannis is like, no, we have to. We don't know what he has in mind. But then later on, Davos smuggles Melisandre and talks about his wife, who I forgot existed. Like, obviously she must have existed if he has a son, but they never mentioned her again. Melisandre's like, you clearly want to see what's underneath this robe. And then he's just like, okay, no. And he just doesn't really respond. Mom, your tongue is black, so please stop doing that.
My tongue is black and full of terrors.
Anyway, Melisandre takes off her robe and she just reveals her pregnant belly. And he's just like, good Lord. And obviously it has not been 9 months, so it's just like she's just pregnant and she popped, and she gets down on the cave floor like near Renly's camp and starts pushing.
You see those peristaltic waves that are involved in labor on the belly. They do an amazing, and this CGI is unfucking believable.
I'm just imagining like her being like completely naked except for some like green screen around her like waist or whatever around her stomach, and her just turning around like, look at me, Davos. It's
funny. Yeah, I mean, you know, and they have the lighting such that like she's the only lit
something in there.
And the lantern kind of flickers because of the Lord of Light and all that stuff. Right. Anyway, she gives birth to a demon child, like a ghost demon man child thing.
It comes out with long, creepy fingers out of her vagina, like it's climbing out. It is the creepiest fucking thing. I'm sorry.
It is creepy as hell. And that's the end of the episode. And also Davos watches. So that's fun.
And he's horrified. And the night is dark. To be
continued.
The night is dark and full of terrors. And full of black.
Yeah. We find out later the ghost person looks like Stannis. So clearly it is his baby.
Ick. Can I just say ick? Can I say
I think
ick,
I understand ick. Now what his semen is like. Like, it's just like a puff of smoke and then more puffs of smoke. Cut that out.
I think we need to talk about biology a little bit, but whatever.
No, you know what I mean though, right? Like, something must have happened there where both of them had smoke and it like intersected somewhere. Anyway, best part.
There's an explanation for that later that I will try to make if I remember, but I probably won't.
Fun. Please don't ever mention that again. I will never mention it again. We don't have to talk about it ever again. Please, Dad, forgive me for that. Anyway, best parts. Rob, obviously, always a best part for me. I just, again, if this was like, I'll talk about it in a second. Tyrion, I love. Marjorie, I love. Tywin and Arya, I love. And Catelyn. For pulling a knife on Littlefinger.
But amazing. Yeah, I have a bunch of really good things, and you did not include Gendry, which I'm just embarrassed.
Gendry! I love Gendry! Gendry's always the best part.
Right, and Gendry actually appears in this episode, whereas Rob does not. So there we go.
He doesn't, does he? No, he does! No. He does at the beginning! He does at the beginning! He meets Talissa.
Oh, yeah. I don't have him meeting her, though. I did not include him as the best part in this episode because I really don't necessarily love this whole Talissa thing.
I love Gendry. I separated them, Mom. Don't worry about it.
Fucking love Gendry. I love Arya. I love Tywin because, you know, love to hate kind of dude. He's fabulous. I love Catelyn in this episode. I love Marjorie in this episode. I love Tyrion in this episode. I've got Zara with a question mark because I love the actor so
much. I love the actor. He's from Cinderella 2015 along with I almost said Kit Harington, Richard Madden.
Yeah, we're gonna see him again, and I love him as an actor, so I can't help but say I love him.
He's so smooth.
He was also on Ted Lasso, so there.
Yes,
he's fabulous wherever he is. Jorah, I like in this episode because he's like the voice of reason to Daenerys, like, hey, don't say stupid shit, and she says stupid shit anyway. So yeah, that was my worst part
to him.
Yes. What are your worst parts?
Joffrey in all caps, that awful, awful human being. Meryn Trant for beating Sansa. Oh God, the horse stuff I did not need to see. I could just hear about. I don't need to see, or I don't want to hear about it either. Anyway,
I don't think you'd actually know how bad Joffrey was if you just heard about it though.
True. I would believe it though. And Talissa, I wanted her to be a warrior princess.
Oh, you are missing all kinds of bad shit in this episode. We've got Joffrey. We've got Melisandre, who's fucking terrible.
Oh, Melisandre. You've got Stannis,
fucking terrible. Roose Bolton, fucking terrible.
Oh, Roose Bolton. And Meryn
Trant. So yeah, you missed some bad parts in here.
Fine, I'll add Roose Bolton, Melisandre, and Stannis, and their love child.
Their demon love child.
Their demon love child.
Oh, and they have all the creepy music that goes with it.
I had mentioned the creepy demon love child to my roommate, and she didn't fully understand it until she saw it, and I was just like, creepy, right? It's so ridiculously awful.
Like, I think that, like, men generally think of, like, creepy stuff involving the female anatomy, but this, from my female's perspective, is creepy as fuck. It's like, oh my God.
I would not want that coming out of me.
No, not ever.
Aren't you glad I wasn't a demon baby?
Yes.
With my little hand, like, grabbing at your legs. Like, no.
So, what grade did you give this episode?
B minus.
Oh, really? I gave it a B plus. Because, honestly, I feel like this, it's totally memorable. There is a lot.
But I don't want to see Joffrey torturing people.
It is memorable for bad reasons, but it is memorable. And again,
fine, I'll probably bump it up to a B.
Okay, but my reasoning is that there is a lot of important plot stuff in here. It is scary. That's
most of these episodes, negative. Mother.
Some of it's just. There is a lot of action stuff that is important here, and so I feel like this is a better episode, but. In any case, we've got a lot to cover with Game of Thrones because there's a lot coming. We hope that you join us and
cheers.